obviously with his F-22 sitting here was dramatically different from what we had in Vietnam in the A-4 and especially in the Bird Dog. All we had at the time was basically a map, so you learn to read the map very, very well. The Marine squadrons, I was with VMA 211 based in Chu Lai. We were moved off of the carriers so that our reaction time for the close air support to the Marine grunts and the Army grunts would be much more. I flew the A-4 for quite a while, and then I was asked to volunteer to go fly as a Bird Dog FAC with VMO 6, and I was my call sign was Fingerprint 41 in the 01. And so it was flying the Bird Dog was actually more rewarding to me personally, and I was 21 years old, so I was dumber than a box of rocks. But working with the grunts on a daily basis and seeing the impact that you made on saving our Marines and saving our soldiers was pretty dramatic.
So you moved to Navy and flew what, the Corsair?
Yes, sir. I flew the A-7 Corsair, deployed on the Forrestal and the Eisenhower.
So describe, what's the difference between carrier launch and trap compared to landing out here on a runway?
Well, one thing, that runway is not moving. And the carrier can be pretty interesting. The worst deck I ever landed on was pitching 26 feet, and that can be rather sporting. Taking off out of here, you know, you push the power up and you launch, and with a catapult shot, you go from, typically in the A-7 loaded, we would go from zero to about 175 in 1.9 seconds. So it was a pretty good cat shot. And, of course, coming into land, you had about a 24-inch window as you came across the back of the ship. So it was fun. I loved it. I'd be doing it again today if they'd let me.
Move on to the Air Force. You, Mr. Every United States Armed Force, flying the Warthog in Bosnia.
Yes, sir. You ought to see my closet. It looks like a war surplus store. But I was in the Navy, and I had been selected for commander and all this other stuff. And they came in and said, well, you guys aren't going to be flying anymore. And I had a buddy of mine that was the squadron commander of an A-10 unit. And I called Pig Dog and said, hey, you know, what do you think? And he said, man, I'd love to have you. I had a really unique experience. I got to go to Top Gun School, or Air Force Fighter Weapons School, as a naval aviator, which was kind of interesting. That's kind of a funny story. But and at the time, I had a two-star general who happened to be one of my best friends, who was the head of the Air National Guard, and I called Phil up and told him what I wanted to do. And this is a true story, as God is my witness. I was out of the Navy and in the Air Force in a day and a half.
So that, what was your first flights over Bosnia in the A-10?
In Bosnia, we were deployed initially during Operation Deny Flight, and we flew patrols over Bosnia, keeping the Serb forces on the ground, their air force and everything. We kept them down, and then in August of '95, the Serbs shelled the marketplace in Sarajevo and killed a bunch of women and children. And then NATO finally got the guts to do something about it. And we launched, I led the first strike of A-10s that morning, August 25th. And we then changed to deliberate force. And I honestly didn't think that we were going to be able to go in and hit these guys. Took off at 2 o'clock in the morning. We found our tankers, which for the A-10, we didn't have any air-to-air radar, like, you know, Ray's Bird and John's Bird. So finding our tankers was kind of an interesting thing in the pitch-black night, but we did. And then we went into an orbit off the coast of Bosnia. And about that time, sun came up. Magic, which was the AWACS aircraft, I was Mako 27. And they called me and said, Mako 27, go green, which meant go secure radio and all that other good stuff. So I did, and they came up and said, your weapon's free. And I went, holy crap. we're really going to do this. And so I called the SRAC package over to the radio frequency we needed to be on, and I released him, and I said, you're cleared weapons free. You know, God be with us. And off we went.
Now, how much anti-aircraft, if any, how much ground fire? What were the risks in the way you were flying that mission and those missions?
The one particular mission, this was the first morning, our target was the largest armor repair facility in all of the Balkans. And it was in a town called Hadice, just outside of Sarajevo. My wingman, Dan Peabody, was an attorney, so we called him Counselor. And Counselor and I rolled in, and as I rolled in on the target, Dan, who had never seen any combat experience at all, he was a guard baby his whole life, and all of a sudden he starts yelling at me, and I've rolled in and I've locked up my target that I'm supposed to shoot with a Maverick missile, and just as I'm squeezing the trigger, Dan starts yelling at me, "Nomad, Nomad, Sam, break, Sam, Sam." Well, one of the things that you do if you're going to direct the guys, you tell him which way to break. But Dan was so excited at seeing a real, no kidding, surface-to-air missile coming up that he said everything but which way to break. So it was one of those instantaneous decisions. You know, I just said, okay, I'm going left, and I broke really hard left. And I looked over my shoulder, and I picked up the Sam coming up. And one of the things that you want to do is to defeat it is you want to try and make the angles so great that the missile can't, the gimbal, you know, it can't hack the turn. So anyway, I was able to, and I put flares out. I wasn't getting anything to let me know that it was a radar missile. So I knew it was a heat seeker and started putting out flares, defeated this missile. And about that time, Dan called me and he said, "Nomad, Nomad, two Sams right, 5 o'clock, break right, break right." And so I broke right into him, picked up those two, defeated those two missiles. And then he called me and he said, "Nomad, break left, Sam coming up, 8 o'clock. So I broke back left, defeated that one. And then the fifth one came up and I'm taking it on. And all of a sudden these tennis ball sized tracers are going by my airplane and there's flak going off. And I thought, damn, this is really serious. And anyway, I was able to defeat that fifth one. Well, the British on Mount Igman were able to fire artillery anti-aircraft on those anti-aircraft sites, and they were able to knock out three of them. But the one that was away out of their range was just hammering away at me, and about that time the sixth SAM came up, and I went over it inverted and was able to defeat it. And then the gun and I were just having, it was like the gunfight at the OK Corral. Literally, I had tracers going by my canopy, and I said, well, you know, if I'm going down, I'm going to take somebody with me, and I flipped my gun on. There's a 30-millimeter shell. The A-10 carries 1,142 of these and fires 70 a second.
Well,
that'll hurt you.
Right.
So anyway, I took on this sight. It was a 37-millimeter, and I started firing at about 9,000-foot slant range, started hitting him, got a secondary explosion, and then broke out of there. In the meantime, Dan had called me, "Nomad, Nomad, I'm hit," because Dan had rolled in to try and help me get some of the pressure off of me. And so now I'm contending with defeating these missiles and these anti-aircraft sites, and now I've got a wingman that's been hit. And I knew that his wife was going to kill me because they were expecting triplets the next month. And if anything happened to Dan, I was a dead man. So anyway, I told Dan to break out and head for feet wet. And I was able to get out of there, finally joined on him, looked at his airplane. What had happened was that we had a bad batch of ammo in his airplane. And it had internally exploded. And Dan, there was a big boom and his airplane shook, so he thought he had been hit. But anyway, I joined on him, and we went to the tanker. I told Magic, the AWACS, that we were desperate for fuel, and the tanker guys actually were magnificent. They rolled out right in front of us about a quarter of a mile, and then we went home. So that was the first morning, first mission.
How'd it go after that? How long were you continued to fly these missions?
We were over there for, and this is right after O'Grady got shot down. Right. We were activated and sent over to Aviano, Italy. We were there for another 5 months. We continued combat operations throughout September and the end of October. And then we actually escorted the Serb forces out of Bosnia.
You know, lately we're hearing or reading in the papers that the Pentagon, I guess the Pentagon wants to cancel the A-10 and get rid of the A-10 Warthog. What's your thought about that?
They're idiots.
Why?
The A-10 is an incredibly unique airplane. It does so many missions well. Sandy mission, which is escorting the rescue helicopters. C-130, but you talk to any grunt on the ground, Marine, Army, or otherwise, and the one airplane that they want to be there is the A-10. It's got the staying power, we've got the loiter time, and we certainly can carry the ordnance. We can't get there as fast as these guys can, and not that their airplanes are not capable, because they certainly are. The A-10 is just a different animal. But to get rid of the A-10 is a huge mistake, big mistake.
Wow. Ray, let's move up to F-16. How long have you been flying the F-16?
15 years now. And so I started back in 2000 flying the airplane. So I've been in as a guard baby, started with Air National Guard, and happy to still be flying it today.
Tell us about the airplane and what it will do and what it's designed to do, what its missions are.
Well, everyone obviously knows about the F-16. Still a very popular airplane, built in the early 70s. The airframe is pretty much the same as it was when it was designed in 1974 when it first flew. However, it's been highly modified now, so we have a lot more capability in the airplane. It was really designed as a day air-to-air fighter. Really, it's now multi-role. It's day and night. And fortunately for us, they have upgraded the weaponry, the avionics, and really made it a very capable airplane for what we use it for. But obviously, it's... you look at the technology and what the F-16 can do, this thing is quantum leap more in technology. So, you know, this is the future. You know, the F-16, I wouldn't say is the past, and in the role that we're in right now, particularly in Afghanistan and where we're flying, where we really are not threatened from the double-digit SAM systems and some of the more technological surface-to-air missiles that can actually knock us out of the sky. Same with the A-10. You know, it is an amazing airplane, and like he's saying, in our role today for close air support, both airplanes are great. It's just not survivable throughout the entire world in the theaters that we can go fight anywhere in the world. So this is the future. Again, the F-16, I think on day 3 or 4 after this guy knocks everything out that can mess with us, then we can do good work. But it is an amazing airplane still today for what it does. It's a great airplane.
What were your Iraq missions? You had 4 deployments to Iraq.
We were deployed as night one of the second Gulf War, so I had a nice seat to watch all the cruise missiles hitting downtown Baghdad for that. But our role over there was really to support the guys on the ground, the Special Forces guys that were in there, that were basically there to push out the current regime. So we've had multiple trips over there to really install the new government, and we've been there a decade before even that war started as a part of the Northern Southern Watch. And, in that part of the world, I think we're going to be there for some time.
Now, what about Afghanistan? You've just come back recently from Afghanistan. What were you doing?
Much of the same thing. So we were, that was our unit's second presidential activation. So we were sent over there for 6 months. And it's really the first time that an Air Guard unit has been sent for 6 months with no swap out. So typically with the Guard, they will take multiple units. And